Okay, welcome to this further podcast for our Calm Parent Challenge. Hello to all the mums and dads listening to this. As ever, I'm always looking forward to seeing you later on today or during the week. And in this module, we're talking about rules. Now, I start the module work off. I'm going to do a little bit of reading from it, which is referred to my notes from the homework with a couple of important things, right? The first is that sometimes things are actually simple. I'm remembering what Michael Burnoff said at the Calm Parent Summit that we did just recently, that parenting isn't hard. It's just harder than it needs to be because we haven't learned. There's something about that. Because in today's module, we're talking about something that, and I have to admit, I definitely include myself in this group. As people, we're not very good at, which is having boundaries, knowing what they are, communicating them, and sticking to them. And we're not good with our children. We're not good with ourselves. We're not good with other people. And I really say the word we here because, of course, I'm talking about myself as well. So the simpler I try and make things, the more true it seems to me to be. And I find if we don't have order, we must have disorder. If we don't have structure, then we must have chaos. It's one or the other. You know me, I'm very dualistic. It's this and that. But it's never one without the other. So there'll be areas of our life in which we have disorder, and that's okay. But I think we can all agree that when everybody inside an organization or a system understands what everybody else is expected to do and who they are and what they're supposed to be, there's much more order than when we have a system where no one knows what anyone else is doing or who anyone else is as well. So the metaphor I use inside the homework is kind of like work. You know, you come into work, you have a contract, so you already have a pretty good idea of what it is you're expected to be doing and also what your role will be defined as successful as. And then when you come in, you also have, you know, training at the start and even follow-up training, depending on how technical your job is. And you might have a supervisor or a work buddy. You're never left on your own, basically. Now we contrast that with a family situation where children who are learning the whole time, because no child learns any skill until they learn it. They learn it through their interactions with their brothers, their sisters, their siblings, their mums, their dads, their aunts, their uncles, and at school as well, where there are no rules whatsoever. Well, if we don't have order, we have chaos. And that's exactly how it often feels in our families. It took me, over the years I've been learning parenting and working it all about parenting, it took me quite some time to understand how important this is. And as my kids have got older, I've started to see how much this has helped me as a dad. Because I didn't know anything about what I'm going to be talking about now in this recording. Nothing, precisely zero. Until I had kids, I had zero understanding of how to set rules and boundaries in a relationship and how to respect other people's, to be fair. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to walk and talk you through some of the ideas inside the homework. As ever, please refer to the written document as well. I'll try and include ideas inside this recording, which maybe I don't have space for in the written work, or maybe digressions, maybe anecdotes. If I can add them in, I will do. But ultimately, I hope this also serves you to help you to understand and deliver these ideas in your own family. But also, if you have ideas as well that you can share with me, I'm super interested in yours too. So you know the process at the Calm Parent Challenge. We don't do rules or discipline, which we'll be talking about in following modules, until we've thought about ourselves. So the first question we ask ourselves is it me? Am I actually part of the issue here because my kid didn't want to switch the laptop off, and instead of being able to use one of the ideas from today's module, I just went crazy because I was so tired and stressed from my own life? Or, for example, do I know the why behind my kid's behavior? Are they really spending a lot of time on screen because right now they're feeling isolated from other classmates and they found their tribe online? That's good. It's useful to know that information because it softens our tone when we talk to them and we can have more empathy and ability to connect with them. And that's a good place to start with when it comes to our relationships. So before we reach for rules, and 100% before we reach for discipline, we ask ourselves these questions. Is it me? And do I know why? And if we don't know the answer to those questions, yes, we can use some of these techniques and ideas here today, but we shouldn't get ahead of ourselves. We should go back a step and think about those two questions. Remembering and recognizing, of course, the whole time that we're perfectly allowed to have bad days and we'll also make mistakes, and that's totally okay. The other day, I'll tell this story. Why not? If a story comes into my mind, I'm not going to fight it. I'll just tell it. So my daughter and I were talking about, I think on like a Sunday or something, we were talking about going rollerblading. And we hadn't really agreed we were going to go rollerblading, which is their kind of passion thing right now. They love going rollerblading. We talked about it, but we hadn't contracted and aligned. So they got back, they started watching some TV. It was okay, it's the weekend. They watch TVs on the weekends, not during the week. And I went to have a bath because I was quite tired. And then my daughter comes into the bathroom and she goes, "Dad, you were supposed to go rollerblading with us." And I said, we talked about it, but we never agreed it because we didn't contract and align. I try and use that phrasing because it's a little weird sounding and it means a very specific thing. And yet again, I realized, because she got upset at that point. She's like, "Oh, you haven't kept your promise." And I said, "I didn't promise. We didn't contract and align. We had a back and forth." And I realized how many disagreements in older kids come about because you and the other person have this different vision of how the world should work and how the day should look and who does what. And me, obviously, I'm talking about me, not just you. And we both have these separate ideas. We're existing in the same ecosystem. We're in the same space, and yet we see the world completely differently. So I used the opportunity again to say to my daughter after we both calmed down, me and her, when we contract and align, I'll use the word promise. I promise we're going to do this. If you don't hear the word promise from me, it's not a contract and alignment. We're just talking about ideas. And this stuff is obvious to me. Maybe I do it with my wife without even thinking about it, or she does it with me. But with a child, they have to learn this. And they learn it the hard way, which is by making mistakes. And that's where a lot of the frustration comes from. So when I talk about rules, I really am talking about contracts. I'm talking about a shared understanding. I'm not talking about maybe the kind of way that we would understand rules is the things our parents didn't allow us to do. It is that, but it's so much more than that. It's really about teaching. So I start the homework off by asking us a question, which is, what's the one thing that irritates us most about our kids? And there are some questions we can ask ourselves. It could be our child not doing their homework, not tidying themselves up, not tidying up after themselves, sorry. You know, it's talking back to us. Maybe they're fighting with their brother or sister, something like that. Now, here are a couple of questions we can ask ourselves. Number one, am I always consistent about what I expect from my child with regards to this behavior? And that question is important because if we say, for example, "Hey, you're allowed to watch TV today for 2 hours," or if we just let them watch TV or screens for 2 hours, and then the next day we come back and say, "Hey, the rule's half an hour," it's not actually our kid that's causing the problem here. It's us. Because one day we're tired and we just want to lie in bed and scroll the internet. And the next day we're fresh and rested and all of a sudden we have a completely different approach. So consistency, which is a challenge we talk about a lot in parenting, is really important. And if we're being inconsistent, we're the problem, not a child. The second question we can ask ourselves is, does my child actually know how to do the thing that I'm asking them to do? So oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes, we are asking our children to do more complex things than a child of that age can do. A 2-year-old, for example, cannot manage their emotions. It's not possible. They don't have the organism doesn't exist in a way that can do it. They're borrowing and interacting with mom and dad and significant others and learning on the go, and their brain's doing amazing things, but you can't expect a 2-year-old to calm down. It's just not possible. Can you expect a 4-year-old to do their homework? Some 4-year-olds will do homework, but many of them will not have the cognitive ability to focus for that period of time and apply themselves to a task, which is why I'm not a massive fan personally of education systems that start too early. Children just aren't ready for it. Can you expect, for example, a 5-year-old to not fight with their brother or sister? I would say no, because a 5-year-old is learning this process, and no 5-year-old ever comes pre-programmed with the systems and the techniques and the toolbox which allow them to know how to manage and navigate difficulties in their relationships with their brothers or sisters. They learn them through the interaction with their brothers and sisters, and that involves some tears and fighting. So is my child able to do the thing I'm asking them to do is a really good question. And if we haven't focused on teaching, which we'll talk about today throughout this module and this recording, then it's going to be helpful. And that's my third question, which is, are we focused on teaching or are we focused on punishing? So my favorite example is this. The kids are fighting. Again, we're angry. We're stressed. We're annoyed because it shouldn't be like this. So we run in and tell them to stop fighting, and maybe we solve the problem between them. You know, like, "Hey, stop using that toy. It's his toy or her toy." And then we leave again. Are the kids fighting 5 minutes later? Sure they are. Why? Because they don't know how to get on with each other. Because they need mom or dad to come in to fix the problem for them. I do this all the time without even thinking about it. But remember, every problem or every negative situation can be turned into a teaching opportunity if we have that mindset. So to come back to this concept, which I've already shared, rules are about teaching, not punishing. They're not about making your child's life miserable. They're not about things you're not allowed to have or things that will happen to you if you don't do what you want. It's much more about how can we ensure that our child is learning over time and through consistent teaching from us. And that sounds really onerous and exhausting. It's not meant to be like that. I hope it doesn't really come across like that. Are they learning over time the skill that I would like to see in them? And if we focus to a skills and a teaching mindset, we're going to have much better outcomes for sure. So the way I like to think about this is, let's maybe even go on to the first step, step two, which is pick your rules. This is quite important. I'm a massive fan, as you probably know, since you've been in this challenge, of the 80-20 rule, which is trying to focus on the one thing which will move the problem 80% of the way, rather than all the small things. So we try and pick the one issue that we really want to work on. If you try and do 5 rules or 10 rules, it's not going to work. You want to pick the one really difficult behavior, the trigger point during the week, which is really causing you a lot of stress. And ask yourself, do I have a rule? Does everybody know about it? Is it reasonable? Does my child agree with the rule? Which is really important as they get older, because the older a kid is, the more we kind of need to contract and align with them. And that's a two-way process, not a one-way process, for it to work. Have I said, am I consistent? I think I've said, am I consistent? How do I know my child knows? Oh, well, I tell them. Telling them is one way of setting rules for sure, but it's not always the best way, because as human beings, we learn more from visuals, and we'll talk about that today, than we do from audio, which is what 99% of our parenting communication is. We tell our children, then we get frustrated when they don't listen to us. I want to move on to step three, because step three was called work out who can make the rules. And I think this is really important. I've touched on it already, which is the older our child is, the more we would expect them to make rules with the family. So Amy from our previous challenge, she did this with her daughter, and she said to her daughter, how long would you want to be using your screens for? And she thought her daughter was going to say 4 hours. Her daughter said 2. Now, is 2 hours the right length of time for screens? Doesn't matter. That's not the conversation we're having here. Okay, if it works inside the family, Amy was expecting 4 and her daughter says 2. I know that's a win for Amy. Okay, now we've agreed 2. Then Amy, I hope you don't mind me talking about this, Amy, but I think this is a really good example of this. Amy then realized that up until then, they had never really had a rule about how much screen time it should be. So she's getting frustrated in the corner, and her husband's getting frustrated because she's frustrated, and her daughter's getting frustrated as well. So now they have a shared framework around which they can talk about. They understand it's 2 hours. Now the next stage was, Amy realized that although she'd said 2 hours, for her daughter, it actually really meant 2 hours of her own time. And dad likes gaming with their daughter. So then she realized that actually she needed to contract and align another time so that they had some extra add-on time for dad time with their daughter, because that's the way they connect with each other. And she wasn't going to fight with it. There's nothing wrong with that. It's a great story, because what Amy's story shows is that we can move from kind of general to more specific. And each time everybody understands that, hey, use the computer for 30 minutes with dad and 2 hours on your own. Whether that's right or wrong, it's not for me to say. It doesn't really matter what I think about that. The closer we get to everybody understanding what the rule is, the easier things get as well. So when my daughters were younger, we just established a very simple rule. From Monday to Friday, we don't eat sweets, candy, if you're in the US. On Saturday and Sunday, you can have the candy, you can have the sweets. Did they try and push the rule? For sure. But it was very clearly understood what the rule is, and it's easy to remember. Same thing with screens. Number one, we don't have phone or tablet. I've been really keen on that one. But we did have uncontrolled rules and boundaries around TV time. And I decided with my wife, and, you know, I think our kids even kind of agreed to this as well in a strange way. It was kind of with their agreement as well. We just went to a new rule, which is Monday to Friday after you get back from school, because they do get back quite late from school, my kids. We don't watch TV. We just play and connect. And I'm fortunate, blessed most days to be able to spend time with them in the evenings, which is a luxury. I know, I really know it. And I want to use it, because my dad wasn't able to do that. To have that connection time, which I think really helps with their behavior overall and just trying to be together. Now, we also live about 5 minutes away from my parents-in-law. So my children's grandmother and grandfather. And they're super helpful. They're always around. But as most grandparents do, they have completely different rules. So over their side, TV times are a lot Let's put it like this. They don't have the same rules. The way I explain this to my daughters, and I talk about this inside the module, is at granddad and grandma's house, you have these rules. And in this house, we have these rules. You know, they're two different sets of rules. Kids, even young kids, can super understand this. Now, we're going to move on now to visual rules. And as I wrote inside the homework, this is one of my favorite rule techniques because it's just such an obvious one to do, and it really does save us so much stress. And it also takes into account the fact that human beings often interpret more data from visual information than we do from auditory information. And yet, as I already mentioned, so much of parenting is telling our children what they're not allowed to do rather than showing them what they are allowed to do. And that's what visual rules are all about. So I've got a few examples inside the homework. Feel free to have a look at them. Which is whenever we can, let's show our children what it is we want them to do. Gosh, am I saying that too often? But I think it bears repeating. If you have a no candies rule from Monday to Friday, you can easily make a week calendar which shows the days they can have them. You could even, you know, make it fun, arts and crafts if you're into this, and that's really not my bag. You can even cut out the wrappers of the sweets or candies that they eat on the Saturday and Sunday so they know exactly when they're going to get them. I had a family with a couple of smaller kids, and they made a kind of evening clock for their evening routine. And their daughter and son moved the clock time around so they knew when it was TV time, when it was eating time, when it was washing time, and when it was bedtime. They made it together. It's fun. More importantly, everybody understands what's going on. I'm thinking also of a great mum, a British mum, who's part of our program. And she created these tasks. Again, it's not about rewards. I need to be careful here because it's not about rewarding your child. You do this, you get that, and that kind of thing. It's not that kind of behavioral thing. It's just really about having that contracting thing. So the kids had a little chart around the chores and the tasks they did on a day-to-day basis. Now, this is going to vary from family to family, so I'm not in the business of telling anyone what their week should look like and what their rules should be. You want to give your child a sweet treat or a dessert every single day? Absolutely fine by me. I trust you'll get the right kind of food, you know? I'm not here to say to anyone, you need to use the screens less. I get it. Screens is a big, big issue. And for a lot of kids, it can be really difficult to live without their screens, and for parents as well. But do we have a rule around it? Does everybody understand, and are we consistent? And if the answer is no, visual rules can be a great way to do this. So the next technique I want to talk about is using empathy when our child wants to break rules. And we practice this in the challenges, so this won't be a surprise to most of you. And I think most of us know about this in theory. It's just that we're so often frustrated, shall we say, with other people in our lives, that the first thing we do when we walk in is we want to try and kind of punch them in the head with the truth, verbally, obviously, not physically. And when we punch people in the face with the truth, they just put their hands up and they close down and shut down and freeze. You know, think about this. I find this with my wife, right? If she's in a rush in the morning, which does happen from time to time, I'm thinking about this morning as well, she's going to come in with that accusatory tone that she does so well. God, I love her, but she does it. And my reaction's not going to be, oh, I'll stop what I'm doing and I'll do exactly what you want. My first reaction is going to be, using that tone on me, is going to be, I don't want to say what I think, but you know, you get my impression, right? Like, I'm going to put my metaphorically hands up. I'm going to be like, I'm going to be frustrated and tense because she's frustrated and tense. Now, I get it. We have the right to be annoyed by our kids' behavior. And I guess I'm allowed to say that my wife has the right to be annoyed by me. In fact, I'd be surprised if she wasn't. There's such a different tone when we use empathy. Let me give you an example. Let's say, for example, our kids are using a lot of computer games. Lots of screen examples in today's homework, but I think it's a good example. If we go in there and we're like, why are you watching someone else play Minecraft on YouTube? That's just stupid and dumb. Which I get, right? It's stupid to be watching someone else to play a computer game. I don't get that. I'm from a different generation of gamers. We didn't watch other people play. We wanted to play ourselves. But that's what kids do right now. If we go in and tell our kid, you're dumb, that's stupid, well, we can imagine what their reaction is going to be. Tense, stressed, closed, the red zone that we talked about in our first homework. If we go in and say, I get why it's important for you to watch other people play the game that you love more than anything else in the world right now, that is a key part of your identity, let's say as a gamer boy, they're going to spend all day talking about it at school. They're going to compare scores. They're going to compare characters. They're going to compare add-ons. This is what your identity becomes as a child, and how you rank in rank order in a hierarchy is whether you have or you don't have and how you have those games. So when mum or dad come in and say, I get why this is important to you, I mean, I'm already feeling more relaxed now as I even say it. The word no is often a part of this. And oftentimes our kid will say something like, and I give the example, "Mum, can I have some chocolate?" Or, "Dad, can I have some chocolate?" And our first reaction is no, because it's not healthy, because you've already eaten, because we had it yesterday, or you'll have it later. And the issue is that no is such a pejorative word, such a negative word. I guess I could say even a triggering word. When we hear the word no ourselves, it kind of gets, it blocks out everything else. And it causes a strong emotional reaction in us. What about if the other person was to go, I understand you want chocolate. In our family, we eat chocolates at the weekend. Do you see the difference? The answer is still the same. Today's a Tuesday, right? So we're not eating chocolates today, but it's done in a different way. And I have found that forcing myself, this is my personal observation, forcing myself to say, I understand, even when I completely disagree, I think you're being dumb. And I just frankly think you're wasting my time and this is ridiculous and doesn't need to be like this and all the other stuff that comes with it. But just forcing myself to say, I understand, even when I don't feel like it, has made me more empathetic. Now, I give an example there of how we can say when our child says, hey, can I have some chocolate? You can say, I understand why you really want chocolate. It's super yummy. I love chocolate too. Dessert is after dinner. And you see, they're getting the information about when it's going to happen and what they can have, but in the right order, which is something we're going to talk about like that. So we're going to practice empathy inside the challenges. And I hope we can start to feel, and this has certainly been true all the times we've practiced it, that there's an ocean of difference between no, full stop, I'm in charge, you listen to me, which generates the opposite reaction in our child and in our relationships as well. And I get it. I see why this is important to you. I remember a mum, this was in a webinar, you may have heard me tell this story, but it stuck inside my head. And she said she was concerned about her daughter playing Roblox. I think she was, daughter was 12 years old. And I invited her to sit down with her daughter and just play a game of Roblox together. And she said that when she asked her daughter to do it, her eyes went completely wide, you know, just surprise and shock. And they sat down together. And despite herself, she actually found she was kind of enjoying it. She had a new perspective on her child's life. So this technique and this concept, maybe even one of the most important ones in our parenting dictionary and in our parenting life, is really showing our children, and sometimes in conscious parenting, you know, it's known about validating and all the rest of it. I don't want to get too kind of woo-woo about it, but I think there's something really in that. I'm being seen, I'm being heard. I have value. I'm a good person, I have value. And the thing that I'm interested in is important to me and you, mom, you, dad. You see that. You don't fight it, you get it. So I want to listen to you. I want to hear more from you. I feel like it's worth it for me engaging with you on this subject because I'm not feeling judged harshly. I'm feeling like you're listening because you're showing me you're listening. You're showing me that you're interested in my world. So there's a bunch of different examples inside there. We practice this inside the challenge. For me, it's always trying to start that sentence with, I get it, I understand. Here's the rule we have in our family. So it's not like pathologically avoiding the word no. You can use the word no. You just want to try and use it for those special occasions. Now, the next technique is set the stage to stop the rage. And I used to call this planning ahead, but I think this name is a bit better because it's kind of what it's all about. We went on a trip a while back, and you know when you go to one of those shops where they've got all the stuff for kids and you know that you're supposed to get X or Y, but they have a different plan in mind. It was one of those trips. And set the stage to stop the rage is all about, before you go and do something, you try and predict what your child's likely behavior is going to be. And then what you do is you give them the verbal understanding of what it is you can do and what you won't be doing. So before we go in, I said, we're going to buy things for the holiday. The things we're going to get are puzzles and travel games. We're not going to get anything else. And of course, because they're kids, they're like, oh, can I have this? Can I have that? Can I have this? And I said, remember what we agreed? We're here to buy puzzles and travel games. So that's what setting the stage to stop the rage is. And this probably is a technique, I guess, for younger kids, because it's the kind of situation you're going to get an awful lot with younger kids. I really nailed this one, I think, when I started learning parenting, because I started realizing how many times you can predict what the negative situation is going to be. And if you are thinking to yourself, oh, we're going to go here, they're going to get hungry, they're going to ask for sweets or candy, they're going to ask to do this or that, prepare them in advance, set the stage to stop the rage, and they will have the information they know so that at least it's not a surprise that we're not going to buy a toy this time we go to the shop, or that it's Tuesday and we don't have something sugary on a Tuesday. We're getting their brain adjusted to this idea before we get there. I mean, I use this all the time. Really, I would say like probably every single day I'm using a variation on this. Let me see if I can think of another example for a moment. Hang on a sec. I mean, even for example, with time, I use a timer an awful lot on my phone or my watch. I tried not to have my phone as much as possible, as you know. And I hope this doesn't sound like I'm praising my own parenting. It's one of the things I dislike the most. But you know what I mean? I'm just giving examples from my own life. Showing on the watch how many minutes we have left for the playtime to be over. And then saying we have 10 minutes left. We have 5 minutes left. We have 2 minutes left. Again, just giving their mind time to prepare to the fact that something's about to change. So set the stage to stop the rage. I haven't talked about it very much here, but it's about predicting in advance the negative, potential negative or challenging behavior, and then trying to establish what the rule or the boundary is going to be around then. Step six is around praising the positive behavior. The examples, as I was rereading them this morning, I'm like, oh, maybe they sound a little bit awkward, but really it's about just noticing when your kid does something right and praising them for it. I remember I was in a soft play place and this kid was bothering another kid, and the girl, let's say the boy was bothering the girl, just make it easier to, I didn't know their names. The boy was stealing stuff from the girl, and I saw the girl raise her hand to hit the boy and then stop herself. Maybe she was 4 or 5. That would have been a praiseable moment as a parent. If I'd been the parent of that girl, I would have said, well done. You really got frustrated and angry, and I could see that, but you stopped yourself from hitting. That's a good thing. That's what I want to see. Not denying the kid's emotions or frustration or telling her she's bad for hitting, but just explaining to her that it's good to be able to have that in your toolbox if you can. The reason why is because other kids don't like kids that hit. So whenever we catch our children doing something good, we should praise that behavior without wanting to fall into this praise trap, which I won't go into too much now, but I think we all know what it means, right? Which is where we're kind of praising to manipulate or overpraising or even getting into that whole, you're amazing, you're great thing. I don't want to go too far on that. But if, for example, your child says, I know the half an hour's up, I'll put my phone away in one moment, and they do put their phone away in one moment, that's a praiseable moment for sure. Children, as long as their needs are being satisfied in the context of their relationship with us, will want to help us naturally. That's natural cooperation that comes from the kind of well-gelled relationship that we have with someone else. So every single time we see someone doing something that we like, we should probably praise them for it without turning it into a, oh, you've helped your brother. Finally, you've stopped hitting your brother. You know, like, oh, God, it's so terrible with you. But for once, you finally done. That's not what we're talking about. I think we can all agree that's quite manipulative. It's just saying, hey, I loved the way that you tried to help your brother with that thing. I'd love to see you do more of it. Again, oftentimes, it's about the intention in our voice, you know, and it's about the energy we're carrying and the emotion we're carrying with the voice. Now, the next step is one of my absolute all-time favorite all about parenting techniques, and it's called offer two options within limits. Now, the first thing to say probably is that we get overwhelmed by choice in our adult lives all the time. And then what we do is we go and overwhelm our children's lives as well. My favorite example is when they say they're hungry, but they don't know what to eat. You ever had that with your kids? Isn't it amazing? You're like, hungry, but you don't know what to eat. I never have that problem. I can go to the fridge right now and pick out 3 different things that I'll happily eat. And the reason why is because I've done it a million times. Deciding what to eat is, cognitively speaking, quite a difficult thing to do. You have to weigh up all the different options that you have and select the best possible option. I don't know about you, but sometimes I hover by the fridge despite everything, and I'm still like, should I do this or should I do that? The paradox of choice is the more choice you have, the less likely you are to make a decision. So if we stand by the fridge and we're like, hey, do you want to have yogurt? Do you want to have banana? Do you want to have this? Do you want to have that? Do you want to have this? The more choices we give our children, the less likely they are to make a choice. So options within limits satisfies our children's natural need for choice within the limits and the rules and the boundaries we have within our family. So let's say, for example, our kid wants to have something sugary and sweet candy. Well, if our rule is we don't have that on Monday to Friday, we can say something to them like this. I totally get why you want to have something sweet, darling. Today's a Tuesday. So on Tuesdays, we eat something that's healthy and sweet. You can have a banana or an apple. It's your choice. And then they go, I want a candy. I want a cookie. I totally get that. Today's Tuesday. You can have a banana and apple. It's your choice. You're still not saying no. You're not trying to fight them. You're just giving a simple explanation of what the rule is in your family. Now, if your kid, this is a very, very regular question I get from parents, says, I don't want an apple, I don't want a banana, I want a pear. Well, that's a choice that they've made, and it's within the rules within the family. So it's perfectly okay for your child to come up with their own solution. Let's say they get a bit more frustrated. They're like, I hate you, they run off. You could say to them, if before they run off, if you want to choose something that's healthy and sweet, you can absolutely eat it. Those are the choices. You're not trying to persuade. You're not trying to force. You're not trying to guilt trip. You're just simply explaining you have this choice or that choice. And it's your choice. It is really your choice within the rules we have within the family. So I use this technique. This is easily one of the, I would say, probably my most effective techniques that I use. And it works. You can use this on your partner, by the way. You don't say, hey, we're going on holiday to Turkey or Barbados. You say, hey, we can go to Turkey or Barbados, but it's your choice. You choose. And you'll find the other person really responds well to this. Let's say, for example, you have a problem with your kid brushing their teeth. You don't say, hey, you got to brush your teeth right now. You know, I'm in a rush. You say, hey, it's time to brush your teeth. Would you like to brush your teeth with this toothpaste or that toothpaste? It's your choice. Before or after the bath? It's your choice. With mum or with dad if dad's around? It's your choice. It's your choice within the rules we have within the family. The reason why I love this technique is if somebody uses it on me, I feel great because I actually feel like I'm being listened to. And I feel like I have a choice and control over my life. So you can use this technique 15, 20 times a day. I remember, for example, when my daughter was much, much younger, I'd use it when she didn't want to go to school. Luckily, we had a preschool kindergarten type place that was very close. So I could say to her, it's time to go, but you can decide you want to go by bike or by bus or by car or by walk. It's your choice. And it is her choice. Each one of them is a little more or less convenient for me, let's say. But, you know, I'm still trying to give her that choice so that she feels like she has some agency over her life. Now, if, for example, they keep pushing and saying, I want a candy, I want a cookie, you're a bad mum, then that technique's not one that you need to force down their throats. You can say, hey, I've given you the choice. That's the rule we have. You know about that rule. If you choose not to have the apple or the pear or the apple or the orange or whatever it was, banana, sorry, that's entirely your choice. On Saturday, the sweet day, the candy day, then you can have something sugary. That's the rule we have within our family. Oh, I hate you. You're a bad mum. Well, I love you and I'll always love you. And loving someone means that you have boundaries with them. Wouldn't it be amazing if we taught our kids how to have boundaries with other people? Wouldn't that be nice? That really would be nice. All right, let's move on to step 8, being careful with exceptions. So I think we've already established in the current challenge group, and I think I've seen it in every single challenge group and all the parents I've ever worked with and myself, that we are not so good at being consistent. And it can be so tempting to us just to give in to our kids, just to have a quiet day. And I've had this as well. It's a hot spring day. We have a rule that we eat ice cream in the summer. Am I going to be a total, I don't want to use a swear word, you know, am I going to be a total martinet and really bad guy and say we're not allowed to have ice cream in the spring? Sure, I'm not going to be that guy. But what do my kids ask for the next day when it's not a hot day and it's a spring day? They're going to ask for ice cream again. So we often create our own problem by being inconsistent with our kid. And I gave the example earlier of the parent who, and again, no judgment here, just to be clear, I've done this myself. You know, you're tired, you've had a long day, you want to rest, you lie down in bed, you start scrolling, and all of a sudden the 1 hour of screen time that your kids were having next door becomes 2 hours. And then you rush in, you switch the TV off, maybe they get upset, maybe they don't, but then tomorrow they're going to expect that that's the new norm. So can you have exceptions? Sure you can. But we all know the boss who's like, hey, come in whenever you like, you know. That just means that you come in at 10:15 or something and he doesn't say anything. And he's secretly annoyed at you because you're coming in at 10:15. But really, it's the boss's responsibility. I don't want to use the word fault. It's the boss's responsibility because he was inconsistent about what the time is you're supposed to come into work. So 95% of the time, let's see if we can have the same rule in the same situation as much as possible. It's going to pay back big time in stress dollars. Now, step 9 is called use the power of personal responsibility. And this, I think, is a kind of like a magic gift you can give your child, which is to really try and focus on age-appropriate responsibility for your kid. There's a phrase which really for me kind of has stuck with me from All About Parenting, was, which is, this is your body and it belongs to you. You know best how to look after you. So if, for example, we're the kind of parent and we're like following around our kid, giving them clothes so they don't get cold, or stopping them from falling over, it comes from a good place, which is we don't want our kid to get sick, then we have to look after them. We don't want them to hurt themselves because then they'll feel pain. But ultimately what we're doing is holding our child back. I've got a funny picture of Mark Zuckerberg, please forgive me, Mark, inside the homework where during the interview he's got this nice smiley face and he's saying, we don't micromanage around here. And then in the second bit it says, manager when you're in the job, and he's looking with this kind of weird, freaky look through the window at you. And that's kind of what parenting can often be. I've written here, I'm going to read it out. I think it's so important. There is something magical about the words, you are in charge of you. And actually honoring and validating that by actually letting your child be more responsible for their own actions in life. And hey presto, that also means that they're going to make mistakes, because no child is born with the skill that you want them to use, right? So again, the tree example is a good metaphor. Your kid is climbing a tree. Some parents is not going to just like get down from the tree, you're going to hurt yourself. Other parents are going to know that if a child does fall from the tree, let's say it's a safe and responsible tree branch that's about, I don't know, 2 foot off the ground, just to be kind of make it nice and easy. If they do fall off the tree, it'll be one of the most important things they ever learn, which is mum and dad are not going to be around forever. And in fact, you are in charge of you. Whether we like it or not, a kid is in charge of the way they navigate the world. And I think we can all agree it would be wise for them to be responsible. So the earlier we start with that responsibility, the easier it will be. Our 2-year-old can carry the plate to the sink. Our 5-year-old can absolutely help load the dishwasher. We do want our children to be actively taking part in the family life and chores, because slowly but surely they're building this idea of being able to navigate their way through the world and have autonomy over their lives. So this is connected to that why that you've discussed in previous modules, that why of I'm in control, I'm in charge, I have agency over my life, which is a magic power and a magic feeling that our children could and should be feeling in their relationship with us. Now, our next technique, I keep saying that each technique is one of my favorites, but these techniques really do mean a lot to me. It's called when-then. And we've talked before about how often we use the word no and how powerful it can be. And when-then is a great technique for replacing the word no. So when your kid comes up and says, I'm hungry, can you make me a sandwich? You don't say, no, you haven't washed your hands, you ungrateful child. You say, sure, when you've washed your hands, then we can eat dinner. Or, mum, can you read me a story? Sure, when you clean up your toys, then I'll read you a story. That for me is just or, can I get my screens? Sure, when you've done your homework, then you can have your half an hour on the screens. It's a really simple explanation that life happens in a certain cadence, a certain rhythm, a certain order. First things first. First we work and then we play is basically the rule that we have. For example, with tidying their room, and they say, I want to watch TV. When you've tidied your room, then you can watch TV. It's just a really simple way of saying first we work and then we play. So I don't know how many times I've heard parents tell me that this one's been an absolute game changer. It can turn very easily into a, when you've washed your hands, then I'll give you a reward. Or when you've tidied your room, then I'll give you a reward. That's not what it is. It needs to be part of an established, structured routine that we have inside our family, which explains, first we do this, then we do that. And it's not about guilt tripping or anything like that. It's not about incentivizing a child. It's just saying this happens in a natural order. So use that when, then, when the word no is absolutely on your lips. And the more you use it, the more successful you'll see it becomes. I remember we had an All About Parenting summer party once, and I like playing with kids. I don't know, the examples just stayed in my head. This is the kind of thing I promised I was going to do in this podcast, so you'll have to bear with me. And, you know, the All About Parenting team, there's about 20 people there, and all their kids are there as well, and we're all having a good time. I'm revving the party up with the children because we all brought our kids along. It's all about parenting after all. And at one stage, I'm sitting down with a dad who worked in our team, and his son comes over to me because we were playing, what were we playing? Hang a second. We were playing the city, Brain Man. So Brain Man is when I chase kids around and try and eat their brains. Kids, I love this game. I've only found one child that doesn't like Brain Man so far. And we've been playing Brain Man for quite a while, and his son comes up to me, this guy's son, we're sitting talking on a bench, and he goes, come on, be Brain Man. And I said, when I finish talking to your dad, then I'll come and be Brain Man. And he goes, okay. And the dad leans over to me and he goes, oh my God, you actually do use these techniques. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, dude, I probably missed this one about 1,000 times. But the truth is, I actually then realized, yeah, I really, really do. It's not just theory. It's not just in an app. I really use these techniques all the time and they really help me. So yeah, when then, a definite favorite for sure. And now our final 11th technique is around our partner or our co-parent as well. And the reason why is because if our partner or our co-parent's not on board, we have a bit of an issue here, right? Now, the most common dynamic I see is that because we don't have an alignment and a contracting with our partner ends up saying the exact opposite. And by the way, this is true for ex-partner, boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife. It doesn't really matter, in my opinion. These are things you see inside the home and outside them. The questions I ask you to do here are some of the most interesting parts of this challenge, which is to try to understand that the other person in your relationship with your kids has their own way of seeing the world. And I give you 5 questions to ask yourself about the other person's values, quote unquote, that's what we call them. What activities or tasks do they consistently prioritize even when they're busy? What do they spend money on? What do they like talking about and thinking about and learning about? What kind of achievements and things make them feel excited and special? And what do they keep around them? What do they keep around them? If you can connect to what the other person truly values, I don't just mean, you know, values like honesty and loyalty and faithfulness. I mean properly value, things that genuinely motivate and drive them. You can start to see the world from their eyes. I was kind of laughing, joking with a mum in a webinar recently. She said, her husband's in the military and he's just really hard on the kids. And I said, you can't tell a guy like that to empathize with the kids. We're just talking about empathy, right? I said, don't ask him to empathize with the kids. Ask him to understand what the enemy's objectives are. That's what the military do. I know enough about the military. I've got some friends who've been in the army. I knew an amazing lieutenant colonel in the US cavalry. And he said to me that in Afghanistan, as a great story, kind of not relevant to today's homework, but he said the way that I managed to pacify the area was not through military means. It was through empathy. I went and basically empathized with all the local leaders, the local tribal leaders, and I empathized with my enemy. But of course, in the military, you don't say empathy. You say understand the enemy's objectives. When you talk in language like that, you don't have to say enemy, by the way. You could just say understand the kids' objectives. You're directly tapping into the most routine, supple, and standard automated way that the other person sees the world. So that's my challenge to you, basically, which is to really try and think about what the other person's values actually are and to speak to them from the prism of those values. Some of you will have heard me in our masterclass, maybe ones like 3 Steps to Have a Happy Family or I'm Sick of You, How to Stop Arguing with Your Kids and Your Partner. This, for me, has been an absolute game changer. For example, my wife, for sure, family is her number one value. I definitely think traveling is either top 2 or 3 and then her friends as well. And when it comes to family, there's no point me trying to persuade her how to dress the kids. That's her basic life value, is she wants to keep the kids safe and nurtured. When I start to understand that, there's no point me questioning her decisions around how she dresses the kids. When they're much younger, obviously, now they dress themselves. Because that's part of her intrinsic values. So instead of fighting it and resenting it and resisting it, I try and work with it. And it's become much easier for me to do that. Now, I'm remembering, for example, a family where we had a mum who was super frustrated with her gaming kids. This is a different example from the one I told you earlier. And I said, what's your husband's job? And he was in IT. And he was also a gamer. We have to be super careful that we're not trying to transplant or judge or project our own values onto someone else's as well. If that's the way they connect, I say don't fight it. Create the conditions in which it can happen. Release yourself from, oh, this is wrong and they shouldn't be spending so much time on the computer game. If this is the way those two people connect, honor and validate it. Because, and here's an important point, the more you insist, the more they resist. And this for me has been such an important part of understanding my relationship issues with other people. And also when I've been annoyed and frustrated with other people as well. If we're pushing for the other person to change and do exactly what we want, we shouldn't be surprised if they push back. If we suppress and repress and insist, we may win the day, but ultimately we'll get some form of payback in terms of disrespect, in terms of it being ignored and not listened to. So without wanting us all to feel guilty about it, I do invite us all to realize that if we've been nagging and persisting and complaining and shouting even and getting angry, and maybe with our partners sending them angry messages and links about how they're wrong, we're probably only making the situation worse, and we're almost certainly guaranteeing that even if we're getting our way, they're resisting in some other field of our life. When you talk to them in the language of their values, they purr like little kittens. They're having their tummy scratched. It's fantastic, you know? Because when someone talks in the language of your values, you do the same thing. Me too. You want to talk about sport or parenting? I could talk about that all day. You ask me questions about sport or parenting, I'll talk to you about all day, and I think you're fantastic. You want to talk to me about accountancy? You know, please, it's so painful. So don't ask me about invoices and stuff like that. Ask me how, when I earn money, I protect my family, and I'm all over that, you know, 100%. I hope these examples have been useful, because if you have resistance from the other person, I can tell you what we've been doing up until now isn't working. So this invitation is an invitation for you to try and look at from their point of view and use their language. So I'm going to repeat those questions because I really want to make sure we get this. What activities or tasks do they consistently prioritize? What do they spend money on? What do they like talking or thinking or learning about? What kind of achievements or special occasions do they get energized by? And what do they keep physically around them? Use the language of the other person. Use their other values, not to manipulate them, but so that you're on their wavelength and their brain length as well. And you'll see their cooperation when you change. Oh, I mean, here's a story I've told many times, but it always stuck with me. I had a mum who was saying her husband wouldn't write the family rules. And I said, what's his job? And she said, he's an architect. And I said, does he like drawing? And she goes, yeah, he loves drawing. I said, hey, just an invitation. Why didn't you ask him to draw the family rules with the 5-year-old son rather than write them? She emails me and she goes, I can't believe it. He did it straight away. Why? Because those are his values. Drawing, not writing. And by the way, you can also apply this to your kid as well. Okay, that's it for this module. I sometimes worry that we put too much into each of these, but I really do think each of these techniques used together and separately are real game changers. Remember, this is a process, so trust the process and always go back to those earlier questions. Where are you on that stress score? What are you going to do if you're too high? Do you understand the why? If not, what do you need so that you can understand the why and go back to those 3 psychological needs? Okay, do you have rules? If not, you know what to do. You've had 11 amazing techniques which you can introduce into your family now and in the future as well. Now, what do you do if you've explained the rules, you really feel like you're satisfying those psychological needs, you understand the why, and you're pretty sure that you're not part of the problem here? Well, that's why we talk about discipline in further modules, because discipline is what we say and do with our children when they know the rules, but they still break them. Now, this is a sticky subject, so that's why we cover it at the end, because people want to do discipline first and all the other stuff, the harder stuff, much later or not at all. So don't worry about discipline for now. Just try and apply everything you've learned from this homework. And remember, 2 steps forward, 1 step back. You'll have successes and failures. Some days will feel overwhelming. That's totally okay. Part of the journey. Enjoy the journey. Enjoy the process. And I'll see you again for the next podcast recording.